You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. On December 28th, 2014, NATO formally ended its military involvement in Afghanistan. American and NATO troops remain in the country, but at 13 years, the official war still marks the longest in American history.
The United States has reached the end of the two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that marked the Bush administration's war on terror. Osama bin Laden has been killed. Al-Qaeda and the Taliban have been diminished, but the fight against terrorism continues.
Robert Grenier is former director of the CIA Counterterrorism Center and Islamabad CIA station chief. In his new book, Grenier says in South Central Asia, quote, a combination of unwise policies, inept execution, and myopic zeal had produced a situation arguably worse than the one with which we started.
Robert Grenier joins us now. His new book is called 88 Days to Kandahar, a CIA diary. Robert, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, you portray kind of an amazing what if in world history, a point before the 2000 war in Afghanistan, after the September 11 attacks, where you were essentially trying to negotiate with members of Taliban leadership to turn over Osama bin Laden, maybe prevent the American invasion. Can you describe that situation?
Yes. Well, very shortly after 9/11, I was contacted by a senior member of the Al-Qaeda leadership with whom I had been in touch via satellite phone. This man was no agent of the United States, I can assure you, but he was somebody with whom who was at least willing to speak with an American authority, and he knew who I was. He knew that that I was CIA. And he arranged for me to meet within a few days after 9/11 with an individual by the name of Mullah Osmani, who was the number two figure in the Taliban at that time. And they came with the full blessing of the Taliban leader,
Mullah Omar?
Muhammad Omar. And we sat down and we talked, and I was particularly encouraged at the time because we had very good intelligence on intra-Taliban workings, and I knew that Mullah Osmani himself didn't like bin Laden, didn't like the presence of Al-Qaeda, and I thought that he might be a particularly receptive audience during our discussions. And so we talked through the means by which the Taliban would accede to American demands and still preserve faith politically among their adherents in Afghanistan. And at the end of the day, we weren't quite able to get there. Although at the end of our second conversation, as I said, we had two different conversations spanning about 8 hours total. At the end of which, he actually agreed that he would move Mullah Omar aside. And seize power to keep the Americans from launching an invasion. But unfortunately, he thought better of it shortly afterwards.
If that had happened, if they'd come through, if there had been, in effect, a coup overthrowing the then current leader of the Taliban, would there have been an appetite at home in Washington to accept that kind of deal, or were the gears already spinning? Was an invasion inevitable at that point?
Well, you know, it was interesting. One of the interesting things about all aspects of, you know, those critical 88 days that I describe in the book was just how time was telescoped. Things were moving very, very rapidly. And when I had my first meeting with Mullah Osmani on the 15th, spanning from the 15th to the 16th of September, there was clearly still an appetite in Washington to reach some kind of an accommodation with the Taliban. Shortly thereafter, Mullah Omar came out publicly and said that he would not turn over bin Laden. And at that point, attitudes in Washington hardened considerably. I wasn't there in Washington to see it, but you certainly got the sense from my interactions with those in Washington that it was becoming, that the strong feeling was war is inevitable and things were moving very rapidly in that direction. And so I had the clear and uncomfortable feeling as I engaged in that second round of talks with Mullah Osmani, that even if I could convince him to hand over bin Laden to meet our demands, that it might be very difficult to convince Washington to do so at that point.
Let's dial back to September 10th, 2001, and the days before. You're the CIA station chief in Islamabad. Did you get the sense from Washington that Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, that the Taliban, that Pakistan's support for the Taliban were a serious priority back here in the United States?
Well, was it a serious priority for Washington to try to influence a change in Taliban policy.
Do we view this as a threat?
Oh, clearly we viewed this as a threat. Absolutely no question about that. Obviously, it was Al-Qaeda that was responsible for the twin bombings of American embassies in East Africa in August of 1998. And from that point onward, the U.S. intelligence community in particular was very much focused on the threat that was posed by Al-Qaeda. That perception of the threat increased greatly in the summer of 2001, when there was a great deal of very inspecific information that was available, which indicated that something big was in the works. There was some attack that was being hatched against us, but we had no specifics at the time. In my own discussions with Pakistani authorities and others in the immediate run-up to 9/11, I was convinced in my own mind that it wasn't a matter of whether, it was a matter of when an attack was going to come. Of course, we had no idea how big it would be, how devastating it would be, or precisely where it would come.
Well, then it did come. 88 Days to Kandahar is your title. What are the 88 days you refer to?
Well, those were the 88 days from 9/11 until December 7th, 2001, when we succeeded in driving Al-Qaeda and the Taliban from the Taliban's capital in Kandahar. We think of Kabul as being the prize. Kabul, of course, is the traditional modern capital of Afghanistan, but the ruling Taliban actually made its capital in the south, in Kandahar.
Let's get into how this war in Afghanistan was conducted. I'll go back to a quote we read right at the outset. A combination of unwise policies, inept execution, and myopic zeal had produced a situation arguably worse than the one with which we started. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Yeah, well, you know, at the outset, in the days immediately after 9/11, the U.S. government, you know, writ large, the war cabinet, was struggling with how do we actually conduct this war. And it really sort of came to a head, at least for me, on the 23rd of September, when I received a call from George Tenet, the director of Central Intelligence, saying, well, look, the Pentagon is telling us that there are very few military targets of any kind in Afghanistan. We know where the terrorist training camps are, but they're all empty. The terrorists have all run away. He said, well, what should we do? Do we bomb empty camps? And so that led to a process over the next couple of days where I proposed a way forward in Afghanistan, and that was ultimately accepted a couple of days later by the president. It sort of became the template for our approach at the beginning of the war. And one of the important parts of that was to posit that, look, this should not be a U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. If we fight this war entirely on our own account, we will make enemies of all of the Afghans. At the end of the day, unless we mean to colonize the place, it's Afghans that have to keep that country from again becoming a terrorist safe haven, even if we chase bin Laden and Al-Qaeda away. So I said, no, we need to be working with like-minded Afghans who are willing to rise up against the Taliban and keep their country from continuing as a terrorist safe haven. And fortunately, that's the approach that we took, both with the Northern Alliance, which was fighting a civil war with the Taliban at the time, and I would argue most importantly with Pashtun tribal leaders in the south. So they needed our help militarily against the Taliban, but they were the political front with which we were working. And at the end of the day, this was an Afghan victory, every bit as much as an American victory. Where the situation that I describe in the quote that you just cited was that the policy that we pursued roughly from about 2005 onward, as we saw the Taliban beginning to reassert itself. And at that point, unfortunately, I would argue, the U.S. government forgot the principles under which or upon which we fought what I like to call the first American-Afghan war, and we launched the second American-Afghan war. And that was very much a U.S.-led war. We had 100,000 U.S. troops, an additional 40,000 from NATO. We were spending $100 billion a year. We completely overwhelmed this country economically, politically, financially, in every other way. And we created an unsustainable situation where whatever gains we made, Afghans were not able to sustain on any kind of a basis going forward. And I think that was the great failure of the post-2005 period. And that's why now, as we are leaving Afghanistan, they're once again falling into civil war. There are significant parts of the country that have again fallen under the sway of the Taliban. And at some point in the not-too-distant future, I fear we may see significant parts of that country again become a safe haven for international terrorists.
despite these problems, big picture, do you think terrorism is a greater or lesser threat to the U.S. Compared with the start of the war you're talking about?
Well, I would have to say that writ large, if we look at this as a global phenomenon, it is a greater threat now than it was at 9/11. Now, you know, obviously, God forbid that there would ever be an attack on the scale of 9/11 itself. I think the Al-Qaeda was actually very fortunate. I think there were long odds against their being able to successfully launch the kind of an attack that they did. And because of the precautions that have been taken, you know, we think that it would be much more difficult for them to launch an attack of similar devastating effect in the future. But if we look at this problem of radical Islamic militancy in the world and the effect that it can have not just narrowly on the United States and the West, but that it can have on significant populations within the Muslim world, this is a larger problem now than it was then.
We're talking to Robert Grenier, former director of the CIA Counterterrorism Center and former Islamabad CIA station chief. His new book, 88 Days to Kandahar, recounts his experience during the Bush administration's war on terror.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the decisions made during that time or the outcomes in Iraq and Afghanistan? Do you have questions about how counterterrorism has changed since 9/11? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Robert Grenier, former director of the CIA Counterterrorism Center and former Islamabad CIA station chief. His new book, 88 Days to Kandahar, recounts his experience during the Bush administration's war on terror.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are officially over. Fight against terror in the region continues. Do you have questions about how counterterrorism efforts, U.S. strategy has changed? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Robert, I want to move ahead now in the history to President Obama's withdrawal from Afghanistan. There are things, I gather, you think he could have done better in removing U.S. troops from the country.
Yeah, I think that the first set of mistakes really, I think we can go back to the start of his administration. President Obama, you know, had made it clear throughout his first presidential campaign that he wanted to reinforce the U.S. effort in Afghanistan as the good war, as opposed to the war in Iraq, which was the bad war, the war of choice. And he started out in his administration with a very ambitious set of objectives in Afghanistan, which I was skeptical of at the time. I didn't think that these would be achievable, frankly, in any kind of a reasonable timeline. And I think that the president was very quickly disabused that he would be able to achieve these goals easily or quickly. And at that point, he very much shifted tactics. And after coming up with an original plan for Afghanistan in March of 2009, he came up with a second plan in December of 2009. And he acceded to the military's desire to launch a so-called surge in Afghanistan, substantially increase the number of U.S. troops. But then, paradoxically, he limited the amount of time that we would be able to deploy those troops. And he said that within 18 months, we would begin to withdraw them. And I felt that it was a mistake for the U.S. to take over, in effect, the struggle in the first place. But if you were going to do it, you certainly needed to give it a great deal more time than that. U.S. troops managed to make some substantial gains against the Taliban during the period of the surge, but as I feared at the outset, they were gains that could not be sustained by the Afghans and therefore called into question why we did it in the first place. Now, the concern that I have is, you know, having created a very serious problem in having tried to do too much during much of his administration, now I fear that the president is compounding the problem by doing too little. And I'm concerned about the viability of the current government in Kabul, and I'm particularly concerned about the prospect of the Taliban possibly defeating that government and reasserting its authority over substantial parts or potentially even all of Afghanistan. Ultimately, if the U.S., the United States and the international community don't sustain particularly financial support for the current regime.
You said earlier that the effective stage of the Afghan war was when we relied as much as possible on supporting local partners rather than always taking the lead. But in the long term, was there a reliable local partner in Afghanistan that we could count on to be effective, to do the things we'd hope they'd do?
Well, in the early stages, there were. As I mentioned before, there was the Northern Alliance up in the northern part of the country, and this was a coalition of ethnic and religious minorities who had been fighting a civil war with the Taliban, and they are still the primary force within the current government in Kabul. The far more numerous Pashtuns were concentrated in the south, and the east of the country were always far more problematic, and it was the challenge for us in the first war was to find effective partners among the Pashtuns who were willing to actively resist the Taliban, and I think those partners still do exist, but they have been largely terrorized by the Taliban as the Taliban has been able to reassert control. I think one of the difficulties that we've had, and understandably so, throughout the U.S. experience in Afghanistan, is that many of those individuals who, in the context of Afghan and particularly Pashtun culture, are able to maintain support, both politically and militarily, for themselves, are people who are less than ideal in terms of our notions of good governance, warlords. In short, and I think that much of the U.S. effort after 2002 has been in trying to reinforce central authority in Kabul rather than relying on local leaders, local warlords. And I guess that my take on this is that power in Afghanistan has always been diffuse. It's always been determined at the local level, and that what we need to be willing to do is to engage with local power centers and to make those warlords the best warlords that they can be. Instead, what we have done has been to try, again, to centralize authority in Kabul. We've tried to build up a very large Afghan army, which is simply not sustainable by an economy of that size. And creating that sort of an army simply has not been successful, and the prospects for success in the future are no greater than they've been in the past. So again, I think that we have tried to make Afghanistan something that it is not, rather than trying to work with the Afghanistan that we have, and to focus on our core objectives, which is to keep Afghan territory from being used as an international safe haven.
Are there lessons here for the war against ISIS, trying to find those local partners in Syria and Iraq, even if right off the bat they don't look too promising?
Well, yes, there are certainly lessons, and we're hearing voices now who are saying, well, look, we don't have effective partners on the ground, either in Iraq or particularly in Syria, and therefore the U.S. needs to take a much more muscular role. And I think that's an impulse that we need to strongly resist. I think that the U.S. needs to be engaged. I think that we need to be, if anything, maybe a little bit more aggressive than we have been in the recent past in providing active support to indigenous forces on the ground, particularly in Iraq, where the prospects are better. And that does not include having a large U.S. conventional forces on the ground. We're talking about special forces who are enablers, if you will, who can provide training, who can provide direction, and who can, most importantly, guide U.S. Air Force. But it would be a big mistake for us to try to move in and do what only indigenous forces can do. When you do that, you change qualitatively the nature of the struggle. This becomes a Western, in the perception of people in those countries, this becomes a Western invasion, very much as I would argue we did in the latter stages of our Afghan effort. And I think we're inviting long-term disaster if we do that. The problem here is that Americans understandably don't like open-ended military engagements. Americans don't like fighting for a tie. They want to come in with overwhelming force, solve the problem once and for all, and move on. Unfortunately, that is not the sort of a solution that the current situation in Iraq or Syria will admit of.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Robert Grenier. He's the former director of the CIA Counterterrorism Center and former Islamabad CIA station chief. Been talking about some of the stories and lessons he's shared in his new book. It's called 88 Days to Kandahar, a CIA Diary. It recounts his experience during the Bush administration's war on terror.